on the second day.
Just tell them you have a lot of chemistry students who know they're not going to do well and they need this AP test.
He said that if I couldn't. So where I'm going with this is that we watched the South Vietnamese government on the verge of collapse, and who is president now in 64? And what does he, as spring turns to summer, decide?
Listen, he's not going to run
again. Well, he's going to run again. In addition to...
And he's going to send advisors and have a talking over press.
Well, the advisors are already there. But
he's going to talk.
Yeah, he's going to create a situation where it will be acceptable for us not to be just advisors, but to be active combatants. And that's called the...
Talking over press.
So, yeah, and so Congress passes a resolution with all but two senators approving.
What's this? What price? Can you shout out a number?
If I can find it. Yep, 47. Yeah, I was kind of moving steadily from 42 to 47 there. So, as a result of the Tonkin Gulf affair and congressional resolution, Congress authorizes the president to use whatever force necessary to repel attacks against the United States, which becomes the only congressional statutory authorization for the whole Vietnam War.
Is that what they had in mind?
A whole war for 8 years?
Yeah.
I think it was one of these things where planes fly into your building and you're not thinking 7 years down the road, you're thinking the very next day, what do we need to do and how do I get reelected? Better support the president in a crisis type thing. We'd never been in a Vietnam mess before.
That's because this was the start of the Vietnam
mess. After you've been through one, you can start blaming people for future messes, but the first time around, you know. That's what I mean. Here's some significance. We know that it destroys the Johnson presidency. He doesn't run for re-election in what year? Who does instead?
Nixon.
And that's what we're going to be looking at today, is how Nixon conducted the war after he gets into the presidency. And he pretty much, to be straight up, has to negotiate at the end of his first term in 1972 with almost the exact same conditions that he inherited when he took office in 69. He couldn't make any changes, or he just could prolong it for four more years himself. But in 1970, a year and a half after he's into office, Congress repeals the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. What's that mean? The war ain't legal no more.
It means
my dad.
And yet it's still going on. So that ought to give you some hint here. If it's a situation where the Congress sends this kind of a signal of deauthorizing the war in 1970, but it lasts still onward, what's the theme about presidential war-making powers here?
It's the commander-in-chief power structure thing. Precedence over a congressional war.
There you go. A good parallel that the presidents, plural, or at least Nixon, but really about all of them, have started to extend and stretch power far beyond what was originally intended. It should be Congress declaring war, not presidents just endlessly conducting a war without authorization. But, you know, to be fair to the presidents, Congress didn't declare war. They authorized respond to an attack. They didn't authorize a war.
What to respond to an attack?
The Tonkin Gulf affair. So if Congress didn't declare, why didn't Congress declare war?
That brought the Russians in.
That would have made the Cold War not so cold.
Yes, because when you declare war, a lot of people expect victory. And sometimes victory against the Soviets would mean having to have everybody on the planet kill each other. So Congress avoided that in order to not get too stuck in something. So that kind of leaves that vacancy there that the president can just use more and more power to choose what he wants. So when this war finally ends, and I'm jumping ahead of our story, but when it ends in January of 1973, there's great concerns, and one of the ways it ends, by the way, is Congress in December of 72 votes to cut the funding for the war, like they won't do now, they did then. And knowing that funding is going to stop in January of 73, Nixon drops more bombs on North Vietnam in the December of 1972 than was dropped on everybody in World War II.
And that doesn't help.
It does. I don't say necessarily it results. The way to say it is following the month of December, really because of Russian urging, the North Vietnamese officials finally negotiate with the United States, and the war ends in January of 73. By November of 73, up 9-10 months later, Congress passes something called the War Powers Act. Now you can understand the history behind why it was passed.
Did Russians ever send combat troops like we did, or just money?
No.
Well, they sent technical advisors for the air defense system. They
sent advisors and money and weapons. The Chinese did the same, and they kind of were careful around each other. They were hating each other while they were helping them.
There was also some kind of rumors of Russian interrogators at the Vietnam camp.
The Chinese trained most of the Vietnamese,
But the Chinese and the Vietnamese hate each other. The Russians and the Chinese hate each other. It's not nearly as a cozy, monolithic thing as we were led to believe.
Well, the Russians also built the most advanced air defense system in the world in North Vietnam at the time.
After the war is over, and after the North conquers the South in 75, then Vietnam goes to war with China.
Are you serious?
In 79, yeah.
Holy crap.
No one ever hears about this.
So this
no one ever heard
there
that.
Is so much trouble among the communist world that it was very misleading to assume there was a monolithic communist threat. But that's why we were there. We weren't in Vietnam because Vietnam threatened us. We assumed from the linkage formula that you stop the Russians in Vietnam is the same as stopping them in Cuba.
That's so true. Yeah.
Well, that's the belief of the day was there's one war on terror, not separate regional things for them.
You don't have the air conditioner on, do you?
Not this minute. It's time.
Hopefully it'll come.
So what did the War Powers Act... Does anybody know what the War Powers Act did?
That President cannot deploy troops in combat for more than 60 days without congressional authorization.
Here's the three ways a Congress can... President can put troops in harm's way. First, a declaration of war. Second, statutory authorization. Third, if a president informs Congress that he plans to put soldiers in harm's way, he has to do so within 48 hours of planning to do so. Then he has, 60 days?
Something like that.
Yeah, 60 or 80. 60 days to do it. And then he has to get them out. If after 60 days he hasn't gotten them out, he can have an extension of another 30, just automatic. But after 90 days, if he doesn't get them out, then he has to bring them out or he's subject to violating this law. That's only condition three.
Or he can
three.
Get a statutory approval.
That's only condition three. Oh, condition one and two is there's no time limits on that. That's just declare war or statutorization. What we're doing right now is part two. Congress authorized it with no end and timetables in sight.
Can we go through that quickly one more time again because it was so fast?
Here it is.
This is part of the war.
This is the War Powers Act. A president can put troops into harm's way or hostile environments if A, Congress declares war. That's nothing new. That's what's in the Constitution. Two, if Congress gives statutory authorization.
Which means?
Like we hereby approve of George Bush to use force if necessary to smoke out weapons of mass destruction in Iraq like we did.
What is that different from
declaring war? Declaring war is just open-ended, we're at war. The other one, you could actually tailor it to say these given months for this given purpose if you wanted to. They didn't, but they could have.
We're at war. It's how more used for Germany and the Soviet Union instead of Iraq.
Mm-hmm. And then the third one, this is the one that's really of great importance here, is the third one says, if a president wants to put troops into action, that president's supposed to consult with Congress. And when Reagan put troops into Grenada in 1983, he called up Republican leaders of Congress and claimed he consulted with Congress. A Democratic held Congress. He talked to some Republicans and called that consulting Congress. And then the time starts. You've got the 60 days. And after 60 days, if he needs it, he can go for an additional 30. But after 90, he has to come back, or she has to come back, if Hillary wins, and ask for congressional approval to start.
So,
when was this
passed? 1973, November.
Is this the same year as Roe v. Wade?
Yes. So you can see why it's passed. Because both Johnson and Nixon extended this war way beyond the original purpose of the war. And Congress had abdicated and given up its authority in terms of sharing war-making powers. So Congress wanted to prevent future presidents from becoming so excessively powerful by putting these curtailments on them. But every president except our current one has claimed that this War Powers Act is unconstitutional.
It is.
Is it?
I think it is. Along the same lines as the line of veto, Congress can't delegate its powers like that.
Too. I think it's unconstitutional also. But it's in the right spirit.
But it should be an amendment. Along the line of veto.
But
there's an amendment that
you can see of the things we have for Vietnam is We take over a French former French colony situation. We're trying to prevent the spread of communism in the South to people from the North. It's not doable. We build troops from 1964 to 68, numbers from 50,000 to 500,000. Using old World War II strategy does not win hearts and minds in strategic hamlets like we wish. Johnson is crushed by the situation. He doesn't run for re-election. He halts the bombing and starts negotiating. And by the way, there's a story. The first year, from 1968 to 69, guess what was the heart of the negotiations between the North Vietnamese, the U.S., the Viet Cong, and the South Vietnamese?
No.
What size table they're going to sit at. Because if you use an elongated table, there's going to be people on the end, and they're going to be considered in charge, and all the others are just lesser people in the middle. So they would not negotiate until, like, if they got a table that was fairly representative, a circle was finally arrived at.
That took a year?
It took a year to finally arrive at, we're all going to sit at a circular table so none of the representatives appear superior to each other.
I came up with that solution.
That shows you how much there really wasn't a desire to negotiate.
You have to make sure it's not made of inferior wood and that it's of the correct circumference and diameter.
Well, what would happen is Johnson would get mad and say, they are not serious about negotiations, we're going to start bombing again. And then the Viet Cong would say, they're not really wanting to negotiate, they just want to bomb, we won't negotiate until they stop bombing. And that would go back and forth. And it was that way all the way until right before the 72 election, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger announces, we have made a breakthrough on negotiations, peace is at hand. This is like 8 days before the election.
And then falls
through. So the election arrives, and Nixon wins re-election, and it falls apart.
Gotcha.
So
God, Kissinger.
At the time, I thought Kissinger was lying out of his butt, but it turns out he had really tried sincerely, and it was the North Vietnamese and the South Vietnamese governments that were unwilling to agree to what they had. So that's why you had to go through that December bombing into January.
So this War Powers Act, for it to be declared unconstitutional, someone would have to be charged with breaking that law, and they'd have to be appealed?
Well, the thing about it is, I've never quite understood this situation. Do you impeach presidents before they get into the Supreme Court situation or not? Like the Nixon would not turn over the tapes for Watergate, a story will tell.
So
the Supreme Court addressed that. It would seem to me like he would have to be impeached before the court could act on that.
No, because he was sued, I think, by Congress, wasn't he?
So therefore, if he doesn't respond to the suit, then he can be impeached if he doesn't comply with the court order?
Well, I'm not sure. I think they sued him for release of information. I'm not sure.
So a court would have to deem that he was in violation of an act of law, at which point then it would be up to Congress to impeach him if you're talking War Powers Act.
The Supreme Court was only ruling on the executive privilege part.
But if we were doing it on a War Powers Act thing?
No, then the House of Representatives would just put up his articles of impeachment on the grill and grill him up.
But I really kind of think that that's not going to happen because the court has always indicated they, like you, they don't believe the law is constitutional.
So no one's ever going
Did
to
you ever
it.
Read that paragraph I gave you?
Yeah. But I think the historical part of the law is, why did presidential power grow so quickly? Like, here's the great essay. Trace the growth of presidential power from 1932 to 1973.
1932?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we talking about?
FDR.
FDR's New Deal extension of power. Mm-hmm. World War II, the use of power. Then what, Cold War use of power by Eisenhower in the 50s and Johnson and Kennedy in the 60s and then Nixon also in Vietnam. So that'd be a great one. So I kind of ran through things in a hurry here, but where we left off point by point was up on
where in Woodstock
61. Yeah. Oh, don't forget this. Key element of the war is the Tet Offensive. So if things start with Tonkin Gulf Affair in 64, there's the escalation of troops. This Tet Offensive of 68 is what saps the will of the American public to stay in it. From 68 on, it's the decline, and then finally the end we talked about.
Take a little time.
Yeah. Nixon wins the 19... This is item 70. Nixon won the 1960 election, 68 election. If you do not know about the Democratic Convention debacle and number...
The riots and such?
Yes, the riots and such. Which seems to, is it expunged from our sheet? It's not even on the sheet, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Do you see the convention anywhere on the sheet? Like 68?
Hold on a second. Yeah, 68. Mm-hmm. E. McCarthy, RFK, Hubert Humphrey all seek Democratic nomination after LBJ drops.
I just didn't tell all the story about the crazies.
Yeah.
Like
so
Pegasus and the Yippies. And
well,
all
he told us about it, and it's on the lecture.
Okay.
So on the recording from the last time, it's 56 to 70 where we are now.
Yeah. You might want to look at the 68 election and then who got to be candidates and why, and why Nixon wins.
That's not like 5 hours, is it?
You could look in your Kindle in a book, in a page or two.
Oh, I meant the. Never mind.
Now we're on to 71. Nixon takes office over Humphrey because Johnson didn't even run. During the campaign, yes?
What year was the War Powers in?
73. We negotiate our way out in January. The War Powers Act's in November. And you know, we'll come to it. We'll come to it here. Nixon claims during the election that he has a secret plan to end the war. He won't reveal it until he gets elected because he doesn't want the enemy to know what he has in mind, but he has a secret plan to end the war.
Okay.
He wins the election, takes office. Months go by. After 6 months, people are clamoring, "What's the secret plan? Tell us all about it." And then he just honestly explains, "I had no plan. That was just the way you get elected."
I think that's the popular opinion of the House Representatives of the time.
So pressed to do something different, you know, to get our troops out, Nixon finally comes up with a plan. Calls it Vietnamization.
He came up with that in all my
Vietnamization. Look for a Vietnamization of Iraq, by the way. Vietnamization was this.
We'll hand over the Iraqi security forces.
We will withdraw our troops steadily, layer by layer, as the South Vietnamese troops, in a commensurate fashion, can pick up the fight.
Man. Which they will never do.
Well, here's the question to ask. Why did we go from 50,000 to 500,000 by the time of the Tet Offensive?
Because the Vietnamese troops weren't fighting.
They weren't fighting, unwilling to do so, and didn't have the commitment to do so. So what makes us think that the Iraqis are going to pick up the fight as we steadily leave?
We don't. He's just appeasing the public.
He wanted to get rid of protests. And when you could say each month that you're bringing home more and more troops and de-escalating our involvement, that went a long way towards stemming the protests of the war.
But could you prove that you're bringing home troops?
They were filmed coming into airports. I mean, there was numbers released. This many troops brought home.
Later.
False numbers?
No, they were accurate. They were,
oh, okay.
They were,
it's just that they were.
Well, the question you should be asking is, if we're bringing our troops out and they can't hold without our troops, why aren't they losing this war?
Because we have the draft.
No, because we're bringing it back. The bombing is picked up. That's the legacy of the Nixon years. In order to prevent the northern aid to the South wiping out the weaker South Vietnamese army, the bombing on the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which we've seen before. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm surprised this has been here all year and no one's stolen it.
That's so cool.
I bought more than this.
Thank you.
It's illegal for you to have it without a teacher supervising.
It's illegal for me to have it?
No, for him. Oh.
This has been on the AP test.
You have to be 18-year-old operator.
What is this route from North Vietnam through Laos to South Vietnam? The Ho Chi Minh Trail. So the bombing of the Ho Chi Minh Trail picks up. And then eventually the bombing of what they claimed were industrial sites, but there were no industrial sites. You get anything around outside of Vietnam. So they're bombing schools, hospitals, villages, aqueduct systems. They're bombing everything to terrorize the North Vietnamese into stopping supporting the South.
To what?
Not cool.
To what?
Terrorize.
Stop. They're terrorizing the Vietnamese. They're intimidating. North Vietnamese population not to assist the South. The bombing is so widespread that some American liberals complain that if North Vietnam is technically a neutral nation, which not in action but on paper it is, should we be as a nation bombing and killing and civilians and schools and hospitals and villages and
stuff? So the North Vietnamese army never invaded?
They would dress up as independent Viet Cong people and move south, but not massive actual official army invasions.
So
So we were bombing North Vietnam?
Because they were aiding the Viet Cong in the South. So who in 1972 makes a tour of Hanoi to show the bombings of these
Jane areas? Fonda.
Jane Fonda, Hanoi Jane.
Who's accused of being
And it wasn't very cute when she was sitting on a big, you know, anti-aircraft artillery gun with a North Vietnamese helmet on, smiling, rolling around on the...
While they're shooting down an American flag.
I don't know. But that was cute right there.
Yeah. she said it wasn't her brightest moment in life. She did that.
Why was she wearing a North Vietnamese helmet?
They thought it'd be cute for the photo. But
isn't that... Why was the North Vietnamese army there?
She was visiting North Vietnam. Oh. She went to see prisoners, etc. Who didn't want to see her? So that's how Nixon was keeping South Vietnam from falling, was as you reduce the troop level, making it look like we are getting out and de-escalating, you keep South Vietnam from falling by just bombing the hell out of every possible lifeline coming into the Viet Cong in the South. But it's still not winning, and it's still in danger of losing. You're just stuck. Just committing more and more troops, or not troops, but now more and more material and money into a conflict that is not winning. Vietnamization is just delaying, not working.
You see the Onion article? John McCain returns to POW camp to revitalize his campaign.
That must be new. Must be a new Onion. Here's an event. Here are some events that are of significance. Number 72, November of 1969. It is revealed that a year earlier, in 1968, the My Lai massacre.
Yeah.
And the revelation comes from newspaper reporter Seymour Hersh, who has written recently some very scathing attacks on the Bush administration concerning, I guess, concerning Abu Ghraib.
It's on there.
He's the one that released the first about Abu Ghraib.
So the massacre took place in 68.
Mm-hmm. This involves Marines being sent to clear out a village of Viet Cong. There was never any proof that any Viet Cong were found.
Was that the one they shot everyone?
But a number of women and children and all innocent civilians were laying in ditches and all mowed down with machine guns.
Well, and like two of them even got jail time.
Lieutenant William Calley was the person who was in charge of this. And of course, it was a year before he was finally brought to trial. He was brought to trial.
Who?
Lieutenant William Calley. Is his name there? There it is in 73.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that it became known is a guy named Medina, when this all started, shot himself in the foot so he could not be part of the action. And he later revealed to the press what went on. Calley was convicted. The defense used by Calley's lawyer was, yes, this may have been a massacre that got out of hands, but wasn't this the climate of not knowing how to make sense out of a war that had led to such brutality? Therefore, it's not just Calley's fault. Isn't this the fault of the whole war itself? And if that's the case, shouldn't all America's leaders be on trial, not Calley?
Yes.
Therefore, how can we convict him?
Well, on the defense of some of the other members of that platoon, wasn't there one like shot over the heads of them instead of actually shooting them?
They claimed that.
They got off on it?
They claimed it.
So they claimed the war was the cause of the massacre?
Yeah, that you're in a situation that a war policy that made no sense, that led to brutality, that in that kind of climate you couldn't help but be intimidated into becoming irresponsible yourself. So
I think that guy may have been charged for insubordination for not shooting him.
Well, Calley was convicted, and I think within a year or two he was pardoned by Nixon.
Now, is that, like, you think it was a year or two, or you think...
I know he was pardoned. I don't know.
Okay, that's all I wanted.
This should have it. Calley and Nixon.
Oh, that's okay.
In April of 1970, what a difference the century makes.
Where does that sound there?
Well, okay, this is 74, this is 74. This, if you were in a situation where all you really need to hope for is for your year's enlistment to get up and you leave and you're not going to be sent back, they had enough people, they were drafting it and they sent people back. There wasn't a real commitment to the war situation. Instead, soldiers waited their time out, smoking dope, fraternizing with some of the locals.
Starting the heroin epidemic.
There was also, this is something I could ask of, you know, racial tensions. Because most of the commanders in the military were white, but they were often filled with Hispanic and black soldiers that never got the appointments they got. but were sent into dangerous details. So one of the ways you don't get sent into danger is to get rid of your own lieutenant. So the murder rate, the fragging rate as it was called, throwing grenades at your own leader so you don't have to be thrown into battle, was pretty high, and they say a lot of racist tensions are the cause of that.
Well, didn't they have one fragging at the beginning of the Iraq War?
Mm-hmm.
An Arabic soldier threw a grenade into his headquarters tent?
I remember that, yeah. If actually, he was African-American, but he was Muslim.
Oh, yeah.
If you're interested in this racial tensions in among troops in Vietnam, the book to get is called Bloods. It tells all about that.
As in Watts area Bloods? Or?
But it means in the war, soldiers in the war. There is, in 1970, the Kent State Affair.
Affair?
Well, by the time of the Vietnamization program, 69 through 70, campus protests, we talked about those campus protests in 67, 68. Before there was actually campus protests, there were what were called teach-ins.
Did we do 75?
I skipped it.
Okay.
Because at the time I wrote this, I thought it was significant, but in the look back, it's too much to
keep skipping.
Yeah. The teach-ins in the mid-60s were campus seminars were held discussing the war, and supposedly teach-ins back in the mid-60s were supposed to be both sides of the war get to be discussed and debated.
You know other stuff.
But by the 67-68 period, most of the gatherings at these college teach-ins were not pro-war. They were just criticism and protests. But the protests after 69 and 70, or 68 started to drop because of the Vietnamization program. So there was a period when I left high school and went to college in 70, I was a little bit kind of disappointed that there were no protests that I couldn't get into. I only got to be in one in Fayetteville. By that time period, it was ratcheted downward. Well, when it was discovered that Nixon had secretly invaded Cambodia, which is what's going on here, number 75, for over a year's time had been having American troops in the neutral nation next door to Cambodia, widening the war. That's when that surfaced in the press. Campus protests broke out in the spring of 70.
What were we doing in Cambodia?
Communists.
Trying to stop the... not only the Khmer, but also the Viet Cong were getting their aid through Cambodia because we were bombing a lot of the trail up in Laos.
Mm-hmm.
So strategically, it's a good idea. But... for a war that's failing, should we be widening it? Is that kind of like how would Americans feel if we widened the war into Syria and Iran in order to stop the insurgency in Iraq?
And what if Iran and Syria widened into our
war? I think it's possible, too. Well, that's what was happening here with widening the war in Cambodia. So protests arose again around finals time in the spring of 1970 on Kent State, Ohio campus. National Guard were called in to put down a protest that had started on a Friday, and by Saturday and Sunday before class started had turned into not just a protest but the looting of downtown stores and pretty wild behavior. So when the National Guard was called in by the Ohio governor, it became a real confrontation between National Guard soldiers and protesters, and frightened the National Guard fired into the crowds. And what really happened is the people who are not protesters on their way to finals are the ones who were shot. 16 were injured and 4 were killed.
They fired in the crowd because what?
Rocks, intimidation. They were being taunted. It's hard. I don't think the National Guard and the Kent State Affair just mercilessly tried to murder people.
Wasn't there?
Were there guns? Did students have guns?
No.
They have knives, firecrackers,
pop bottles,
marijuana. They had some of that.
Why would you fire them?
Good thing to read the details of. What it did become national attention, and Neil Young, who was my son's name, wrote a song that became a big, big song of the protest movement called Ohio, in which the refrain of the song is "Four dead in Ohio" at the end, repeated over and over. And the song sounds like a march. I think I have it on my computer. I'll play it sometime for you.
That I saw a thing on the History Channel, right? And it was like where they were at the end no place for the students to go to get out.
So therefore,
and the place, and like they say that like riot police, the way they're supposed to do it is they're always supposed to give the crowd a place to go, because if they're backed up against something, that's when they start feeling like desperate.
That makes sense.
And they start coming at the riot police.
That makes sense, exactly what would happen. 2 days prior to this, lesser publicized, but Jackson State University in Jackson, Mississippi, had also experienced protests of the war, and National Guard had fired on and killed two people there, but it never got the publicity as much as Kent State, Ohio. So from a war that had started to wind down on protest because of Vietnamization, the revelation of the neutral invasion of Cambodia resurges with the protest.
Where's Jackson State?
Mississippi. Here's another exciting feature of the war. The Pentagon Papers. And item 77. Daniel Ellsberg. Interesting character. A Republican who worked for the Army. Was in the RAND Research and Development Division of the Army. And he and others had been given the assignment to compile a official military history of our involvement in Vietnam from start up to the present. As he and others put this together, he began to notice that the reasons given for being in Vietnam didn't seem to match the reality. Reasons being, we were there just to promote democracy. We were there because a friend invited us and needed help. And third was that we were there for the sole purpose, or not sole, but in addition to the first two purposes, for the major purpose of stopping the spread of communism. What Ellsberg and others began to feel like is, this friend didn't really invite us, we kind of butt-in-skied our way in. They're not a democracy, they're a right-wing fascist government. And we're not there to stop communism anymore, we're there because we can't get out. Will look bad if we try to get out. And in fact, you hear these comments now. If we, it's bad that we got into Vietnam, we shouldn't have got in, but now once we're in, if we get out, what message will that send to the communist world?
That they win.
Yeah, that they win, and that we are paper tigers in the week, and if we cave here, we'll cave at the next place. Therefore, in order to protect our prestige and not allow the worldwide communist movement to make gains, we have to stay and win. How do you stay and win with a government that can't stand without you?
And you stay there indefinitely.
Sound familiar?
I did hear something.
Yeah, but they didn't have a mission accomplished banner in Vietnam.
Isn't it like yesterday or today?
That was May 1st. Yeah. It was the anniversary.
Is that today?
No, that was yesterday.
So that's the circumstance is that the war appears to be not at all what it was cracked up to be. But this is a secret history, and this is not supposed to be revealed to anybody. This is for military research purposes. But Ellsberg feels like if the public knew where we were at, if the public knew what the Army's already thinking about this failed thing, there could be enough public pressure to force the Nixon administration to have to get out of Vietnam. There's no way I'll ever, this is Ellsberg thing, there's no way I'll ever get permission to release these documents, so I'll just Xerox them and release them anyway to the New York Times.
Why did you pick the New York Times?
Because that was kind of considered the most prestigious paper in America right after with the Washington Post being next.
Which they kind of got a little bit of a bump from Watergate. Washington Post.
So he did. He Xeroxed and leaked it to the New York Times, so-called Pentagon Papers. The Washington Post would republish the very next day what the New York Times had published the day before. So the two most major newspapers, foremost in prestige and scholarship, were involved in releasing and publishing these secret history of the Vietnam War. Well, the Nixon administration went to the federal courts and asked for a restraining order on publications, a prior restraining order, on the argument that it is endangering our troops by revealing military secrets. But the Times continued to publish, and so did the Post, and the Times editor and the Post editors received financial fines as well as incarceration time from the New York Times editor. Their lawyers told those papers that what's released is about 1965 and 66 and 67 things, not 1971 affairs. If the troops are not where they were, there's no spies named. There's nobody that's truly in danger. The only body that's in danger is Nixon because he can't get out of this war. This is bringing more bad publicity to him. So you will win your lawsuit if you stay and hold on. And they did eventually. But in the 1971 New York Times versus U.S. case, the federal government ruled in favor of the newspaper's right to publish, arguing there was no danger to troops, no secrets revealed. So it was a major loss for the Nixon administration.
What was that case?
Pentagon Papers, or New York Times versus the U.S.
Was that 71?
71. Now, it shouldn't surprise you that when
was
Nixon...
Was it versus the U.S. or was it his
versus
private?
Nixon, New York Times versus Nixon.
Is that a civil trial?
No, it's versus U.S. I always get those screwed up. New York Times versus the U.S.
Your thing says Nixon versus New York Times.
If I still got that typed wrong...
Yes.
Shit. Even when the error goes from one review sheet to the new incarnation.
Okay.
The correct case is New York Times versus the U.S. 1971. Okay. The reason I do that is because in the Watergate affair, there'll
Nixon
be another case, Nixon versus the U.S.
This
1974.
Versus Nixon versus who?
The U.S.
Nixon versus the U.S.
in 1974.
Nixon versus
when
the
they forced him to give up the tapes.
Like the people of the United States.
Yeah. It's the people versus their elected leader.
So when where I'm going with this is that when Nixon seeks re-election in 1972, as you all recall and we'll talk about it, part of the Watergate story is that people broke into the Democratic National Headquarters to steal their campaign secrets so he could win by a landslide, not by the close elections of 68 and 60. These people were called the plumbers, because they were hired to plug up White House leaks to the press.
Are we doing Watergate
right now? We're flirting with Watergate. I'm explaining what happened to Ellsberg.
Okay.
And so in the Watergate break-in days, the plumbers also broke into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office to steal his medical records. For what purpose?
Probably the doctor.
Yes. To say just the releaser of the Pentagon Papers was crazy. That was, they never got to do that, but that's what they were planning to do. So before you think George Bush is the worst president, which he may be, but before you start thinking like that, give Nixon his due.
What?
Give Nixon his fair due here.
When did we find out about all that stuff?
When, well, a lot of it has to do when the tapes come out.
You only know what's been printed.
Wait, so...
That was very
printed on the transcript.
I guess he's giving Bush's time.
How long after the Pentagon Papers is Watergate?
A year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's in the... Because the break-in's in 72, and the affair unfolds in 73. Here's the thing I was telling you about earlier, number 78. As the election, re-election of Nixon approaches, of November of 1972, just 8 days before the election, Secretary of State Kissinger, in serious negotiations with North Vietnamese Foreign Minister Lê Đức Thọ, announces that peace is at hand. They believe they have a treaty that will work. Nixon wins re-election, treaty falls apart.
Yeah. Who is Lê Đức Thọ?
He is like their Secretary of State, foreign North Vietnam.
Are we fighting with North Vietnam?
No, but we're negotiating.
Why? What's the treaty for? To end the war that we're not having with them?
That's right.
Okay.
The North Vietnamese, the South Vietnamese, the Americans, the Viet Cong, there's like four different forces all involved in this. When this treaty finally does go through in January, the South Vietnamese government doesn't agree to it, doesn't sign it. And the major reason they didn't is because all of the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong forces, wherever they may be, can stay where they are. Nobody's expected to move north of the 17th parallel. So peace is called, but nobody has to return to where they came from.
Well, that ends up the Indian government's going to fall apart like that.
Vietnam was...
But it wasn't like that. It was a year and a half.
Well, that was...
They made it from January, and it's 2 years. From January 73 until April 29th, April 30th, 1975, it was peace.
Was there peace, or was there the North Vietnamese still trying to free them?
There were skirmishes, but there was no official war in place from 73 to 79.
Did it just randomly collapse?
Did it actually start a war?
No, it didn't randomly collapse. In a matter of about 2 weeks, the North Vietnamese just declared, we are going to invade the South. And from early April to the end of April, they just swamped over to
the North. Actual North Vietnamese?
Yeah, the actual North Vietnamese government.
74.
After
2 years after we got out in January of 73. Those are the pictures you see of the helicopters evacuating people from the embassy and putting people on the aircraft carriers and
then throwing
them around so they just shove the helicopters into the water so others can land and put people. That's that evacuation of Americans and South Vietnamese people. But that's 2 years after we negotiated out.
Shoving the helicopters into the
You know, when that was going on, I was substitute teaching at Chaffin. Waiting to get hired as a teacher. I was in sixth grade when the Tonkin Gulf affair occurred. And I graduated college waiting to get hired as a teacher, substituting when all that evacuation. And I was looking at that thinking, there was a point where all my life, from elementary school through junior high through high school through college, it was always Vietnam. Just growing, it was always Nixon, it seemed like. It was always Vietnam. And it all ends like this. Just an evacuation, shoving things in the ocean and leaving.
Did you
want to
go kill that Nixon man?
I had my problems with Richard.
But did you want to fly a plane into the mines?
No, but no, I haven't done this in a very organized fashion, but these are the key events that take place here. Back to 79. After that election, after the November 1972 election, Democrats win even more seats than they already held, a larger majority, but Nixon wins the largest landslide in presidential history.
Is that that don't switch horses midstream?
Yeah, I guess it...
Is that a horse? Is that the way...
No,
that's not how it was worded.
How did it go?
Why change in the middle of a good, real life Nixon in 72? Oh, it's why change horses in the stream? Real life Lincoln in 64.
Right, that's
That's not what.
Yeah, there's one historical quote with Nixon.
There's a different one for Nixon.
I know there's a different one. I'm just saying it's the same thing.
But he's right though. This idea that you that reelected presidential commander in chiefs usually win. He did. Lincoln did. Bush did.
And do they ever end a conflict in their second term?
Well, Nixon did.
Hey, Bush's.
But the way he did it, here's the way he did it. First of all, I need to come back to say who he ran against, but let's finish it.
Is that the largest victory in history, aside from
Washington? No, in terms of actual total number of popular votes, total number of electoral votes, he won more electoral votes, even though it wasn't unanimous, and more popular votes anyway. So why would he win huge victories as president, but the Democrats would gain even more seats in Congress?
Because he's running against a nearly card-carrying communist?
That's a lot of it is that George McGovern, World War II bomber, by the way, he bombed Germany in World War II. George McGovern was painted up as the super liberal. The person who was going to cut and run immediately out of Vietnam and take everybody's taxes and give it to the unemployed.
Who was his
opponent?
George McGovern, I voted for him.
I don't know. You were one of the 28 million?
Did they have polls like... Did they say how much the below 30-year-old vote was? Was it the exit polling?
It wasn't all that pro-government. There were a lot of conservative youth.
If you rip apart your draft card, since you're no longer enlisted, can you still vote if you rip your draft card?
Every time I voted, nobody ever asked for a draft card. I have no idea where the hell my draft card is.
All right.
And then how old are you?
Well, I mean, I never remember when I got rid of that thing or lost it. Or
I don't think you're eligible anymore.
But let's back to the story. I want to tell you what's happening. He wins this election in November, but Democrats win a greater majority of seats. And Democrats will take off, and the new ones will take office when?
January 20th.
The very next January. It's not that 13-month delay.
Oh, it's the January 1st?
Yeah, since 1937, since the 20th Amendment. Lame duck periods have been shorter. So the Congress elected November plans in January to cut the funding. So Nixon has between October, November, really, when he gets elected, November and January 3rd, to do whatever he can before the next Congress cuts his funding. And what he chooses to do is to drop more bombs on North Vietnam than he dropped all over World War II. And it is said that that bombing campaign, cruel as it was, hitting civilians, the Russians said to the North Vietnamese, they're ready to negotiate, even though the South Vietnamese don't want to negotiate, the Americans want to leave, and they're willing to leave. So, you know, go ahead and just say, make it agree that the bombing brought you to the table and agree to things, and they'll be gone, and you can have the whole country in a year and a half. And that's what happened. So they come to the table in January, and I think 3 days after LBJ died, the treaty's negotiated, and we're officially out of the war.
What's the treaty?
It's a Paris Peace Treaty, but it doesn't, it's just...
Why are they all Paris?
Because everyone likes doing a Paris vacation and negotiate peace.
Everybody goes to Paris and it's like...
Paris came to be the most neutral place for most wars. So from 73 to 75, we leave. And we embark back upon, and I can remember this very from, really from 73 to 1980. America slips back into something it hasn't experienced since 1941, and that's an isolationism. Burned by Vietnam, wanting to not get caught in anymore, we just really start to pull back the world commitments. The idea that we can be the world policeman against communists is not so popular from 73 to 80. By 75, the North literally invades the South, and the story I told you about all takes place within April of 75, and we just sit back and watch.
74 was the peace treaty?
January 73.
74 is one day.
That's Waterloo days.
And did the Wawa?
They did. So China and Vietnam fought when?
In 79.
79.
Kissinger and Lê Duc Tho both were awarded Nobel Peace Prizes for the year of 1973. Kissinger accepted his, Lê Duc Tho refused. And he finally admitted later that the reason he refused is he knew, their government knew, they were not, the war was not over, that they planned to eventually take over the South, so it would be disingenuous to take a peace prize for what you know is...
Well, he said that's why he didn't take it, that he knew. They got Nobel Peace Prizes for treaty negotiations that failed.
No, the treaty negotiations succeeded.
For a year and a half.
But you're not aware they made
sound. I thought after the election...
This is the peace negotiation in 73.
It's late into 73. There's treaties in January 73.
Okay, so they, the same people negotiated the last one?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Prior to this year, back in 72, Nixon makes a very historic visit to China. He meets Mao Zedong and Zhou Enlai. Warm negotiations between them all. The interesting part to this is we have no official recognition of China as a government. They have none of ours. We still accept Taiwan as the official China.
And they accept as our official government.
They don't.
They don't exist.
Holy crap.
China,
they accept a Chinese map from that time.
So
see, like, the
they accept Great Britain.
We refuse to recognize the People's Republic of China, and they refuse to recognize us. Why is Nixon going, and why is he being welcomed?
Open up trade.
To separate the Russians and the Chinese.
That's it, to widen the Sino-Soviet split. And the Chinese are working the same way to get the Americans on their side in the Sino-Soviet split.
Do they know our feelings toward communism?
Well, they think that they can offer themselves as a new kind of communist.
They're malice communists.
The capitalist communists.
Yeah, that's what they are.
And
yeah.
It worked.
Yeah, and that's what we look at.
You know what, prior to Nixon's visit was kind of the opening the way to smooth the relations between us. Ping pong diplomacy. Letting American ping pong experts go over and play in China, like Forrest Gump did in the movie. It's based on it.
That's how they negotiate?
That's how they first kind
of broke guys.
To ping pong tournaments, they were able to have more and more talks about the possibility of letting Nixon come visit.
Do we still have ping pong tournaments?
And the Olympics, man.
Are the rooms really padded? Are they?
But you know what? After we finish this course, if you go through and watch Forrest Gump in regards to the Vietnam and civil rights and China, it's all there. Forrest Gump is there for the Watergate break-in. I mean, it's really a beautiful film for that.
It's like almost like the onion, except it's true.
How are we doing? Are we still not okay true. On time?
What?
We still.
Oh, 5:30.
5:40.
I thought we wanted to use the
cell phone to let my dad know I'll be up at 7.
My cell phone.
I don't think I'll be up at 7 either. But. I'm here for at least a good half hour, 45 minutes.
What time is that drag coming place closed?
6:30, but that just takes me a minute to run over
there.
I'll just
page
you. So wait, do we know what time we're...
What do you have to drag?
6:30-ish is fine with me.
I have to leave at 6.
Okay, 6 is fine with me. We'll go 6.
You don't need to go to the drag there. You can tell that's not the option.
Well, you guys are the dedicated, and I don't want you to miss out on this.
Like that entire
sheet you guys speaking. Somehow covered in window.
Gosh, can't believe
it. Hey, Dad, what do you mean that? Six.
Let's talk about the oil crisis of 1973.
So,
how did I get the election of 72 way down in 84?
On 81, this repolitic.
Oil politics?
Oil politics?
What is that?
It's a modern version. Well, let's put it this way. Machiavelli, you've heard of him, the Italian political theorist. You've heard of Machiavelli.
Yes.
His argument is that whatever is good for the nation state, or in this case it was city state, whatever is good for the city state should be pursued if it means making alliances with others. Make them, if it means breaking those alliances and making new ones, do so. Whatever is immediately in the best interest of your city-state, a good ruler is one who negotiates this way. Those same ideas were brought up to modernness by Bismarck, who negotiated relations with partners in Europe back and forth before World War I. It is said that Kissinger and Nixon practiced Machiavellian, Bismarckian realpolitik. That's real politics is the German word that Bismarck came up with. So therefore, yes, you're anti-communist, but if it's to your advantage to weaken the Russians by butting up to the Chinese, who cares if they used to be an enemy, now they're your friend because it helps you with your other enemies. And of course, real politics always justified setting up tinhorn dictators to stop the spread of communism. But I don't think that'll be on the AP test. So 82 we did, 84 we've already done. Let's do 83. God, there's more than 84 though. God, tell you more about it. Let's do 84 through 86 and 87. Then we'll come back to the oil business. This 72 election.
We didn't talk about the invasion of Afghanistan.
No, not well. We hinted that that's coming in the future. That's in 1979.
Yeah,
that's what the start of that.
Okay, 84.
The 72 election of 84, again, let me mention this. George McGovern, the Democrat, became the Democrat because all the other potential candidates had dirty tricks played on by the Nixon campaign. What they decided was, we don't want to run against Humphrey. We don't want to run against Scoot Jackson. We don't want to run about Muskie or Vance. Any of the people who are capable Democrats, we don't want to run against. The one we want to run against is George McGovern. The one who is the most leftist, who wants immediately out of the war, who's advocating heavy taxes on the rich to redistribute to the poor, this is the one that will lose big. So how do we make sure he gets to be the candidate?
Screw the rest of them.
2 minutes, I'll be right here.
And we will too.
All right.
And the way you do that is you launch these dirty tricks against all these other candidates. Typical tactics were to write a series of letters to the editors of the local newspapers about these people asked, is it true that they were caught sleeping with the dead boy? What kind of letters? Or is it true that they took embezzlement money? It's never any answer. It's just the question, is it true that? It gets in the newspaper and they get bad publicity and the Democratic Party goes, don't want that candidate. Don't want that
candidate. Wait a second. Who wrote letters?
Nixon operatives.
And with their real names? Real names?
No.
You can't do that.
Then you could.
And you
can't do that now, but you used to be able to do that.
Oh, you can do it now.
Harder to do it now.
How's it harder to do it now?
Portsmouth paper calls you and confirms that you're you.
Right, but you can't have your name withheld.
I know. It used to be.
But
I used to be Colonel William Joseph Simmons.
Okay.
Then you.
And here were the other guys.
You know what you could do though? You can create a fake email account. And then have them call yourself.
That's what that's I would do.
That's true.
I know you.
Why would you write? I know where I live.
Well, anyway, back to your life.
What you're writing.
Thank you. That's one of the ways.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the thesis of Nixon. What's the thesis of Nixon's 1972 hoax and campaign?
To get a landslide.
Yes, because he barely lost in 60 and barely won in 68, and there's not going to be any barely this time. It's going to be 600 points over the crying girls in this tournament.
Why doesn't every president do that?
Because break in, steal headquarters, and submarine.
Well, I mean, with this a news practice, it sounds like.
Because sometimes you get caught.
And you can't really get away with saying Hillary Clinton's a
dead wolf. I mean, why didn't you do that before?
There's only so far I can't recall.
Oh, she's
a
dead wolf.
Bill
Clinton. No. I don't recall.
No!
Gonzalez.
He gets it from this day and age.
I have no recollection of recalling this.
What is your name? I do not recall.
Well, so anyway, back to the situation. They make sure McGovern ends up being the only candidate that was never attacked, so that's what the party nominates. They break into the Watergate headquarters and steal the campaign secrets, get caught at that.
Nice.
So that's the purpose behind all this, is to make sure they win and big in 72. Well, the Democrats help out. And here's first they nominate McGovern. But they don't even nominate until 2 in the morning. Because did I talk about in 68, one of the great controversies within the party was how much the delegations from various places were all still white males.
Yeah.
And that there was a demand to change the rules so that more minorities and more women delegates could be represented. Well, those rules changes were being thought out in 1972. So a lot of time was spent changing the rules, and in the process, people like Jesse Jackson and others were clamoring to have their delegations recognized instead of someone else's. So here's all this big fight on. They spent all the primetime TV fighting between black and white over left-wing issues concerning taxation policy. When they finally got all that delaying crap out of the way and could nominate George McGovern, it was 2 in the morning. Who was left to watch that? Then another problem.
Were you? However you want to watch it.
Another problem that arose, his running mate, who just died here a while back, died like about a month ago, Thomas Eagleton. I just read this about a month ago, he passed away. Thomas Eagleton was a
McGovern's vice president.
I think congressman or senator from Missouri. I think senator from Missouri.
Eagle as in
Eagleton.
The bird. Eagleton.
And he was nominated to run with McGovern, and then it was discovered that Eagleton, who had periods and fits of depression in the past, had undergone shock therapy. So that's the person who's a heartbeat away from the presidency if he wins. And so when challenged about whether or not McGovern wants to keep Eagleton on the ticket, he says, yes, he's my man, I back him 1,000%.
And they changed him?
And then he's changed. He's changed to Sergeant Shriver, the brother-in-law of the Kennedy family, and the founder of the Peace Corps.
What's the
Shriver?
Shriver is his last name.
Shriver?
Mm-hmm. It's number 85.
I think Arnold's his woman. Name is Sergeant, not his rank, but his name is Sergeant Shriver.
Oh, like Major?
I think so.
Major.
Yeah, and I think that this is Marie Shriver, married to what's his name?
Arnold?
Yeah. That's why it turns out to be such a bad election. In fact, Nixon won every state except South Dakota that McGovern came from, and D.C. 3 votes from D.C.
D.C. never was Republican ever.
Think if they hang. They hang with us. Usually we used to get Hawaii, because Hawaii is like 50% of its income is tourist trade, and the other 50% is government spending. And so we used to keep Hawaii on board, but Hawaii even went for Nixon this time.
They got one state.
They got South Dakota.
And Massachusetts.
They got Massachusetts 72?
South Dakota, Washington, D.C.
That's why we weren't as bad off as the 1936 election. I knew that 8 votes went for Alf Landon, but it's like 12 or 17 for?
17 for McGovern.
Yeah, okay, because we got People's
Republic. You always get
People's Republic stayed loyal.
Yeah. They don't vote Republic.
The capital should be like a 3.
They vote Republic. Okay. I think that's what the world is.
Now, before we turn the sheet, let's go back to 83. Let's do a little quick memory work on the Arab-Israeli conflicts.
That's capital, Massachusetts.
Capital?
Boston?
I think it is.
Boston.
I think it is.
It's one of those rare instances where the largest city really is the capital.
Quizbo has the worst time.
It's not Juno.
Israel.
Conflicts. The Vatican is the capital.
Names. As you recall, there was an Arab-Israeli war right when the country was created in 48 and 49. In fact, the end of that war came through because of the negotiations of an African-American second in charge diplomat of the United Nations.
Vice Council? Is
this 83?
Ralph Bunche.
Is this 83?
This is just review up to you explaining 83, yes. So, Ralph Bunche is awarded a Nobel Peace Prize, an African-American person, for his negotiating of the first Arab-Israeli War. A second Arab-Israeli War breaks out in 56 in response to what event?
Suez Canal.
Suez Canal crisis. A third Arab-Israeli War breaks out in this period, well, actually in 72, when the Egyptians under Sadat tried to a preemptive strike on Israel and it backfired on them.
Is that the one where Israel just destroyed the entire Egyptian Air Force in like 5 minutes?
Yeah.
I used to left out of war. 67 war. The most
the 7 days war?
The 7 days war of 67, yeah. And 7 days in 1967.
7 days or 6 days?
Israel took over the Gaza Strip from Egypt, the Golan Heights from Syria, and the West Bank of the Jordan River from Jordan.
Is it
so the 67 war is the biggie because Israel doubles its size and takes in 4.5 million Arab people within its jurisdiction, that becomes the Palestinian population.
Is it the 7 days war or is it the 6 days
war? 6 day war.
Okay.
In 1967.
Because you were saying 7 days war like 3 times back then.
Well, I meant 6.
Because I think I said 7 years ago. Kind of
the reason I remember it so vividly, maybe not correctly, but vividly, is because a close friend of mine in high school, Jewish guy whose father was a Holocaust survivor, and they were super pro-Israel. And so when the 6 day war broke out, they followed it and talked about it. And here he was, anti-war hippie, until it came to Israel. And then the old loyalties emerged.
Well, if you think about this last war against Israel, there are actually several American citizens who are members of the Israeli Defense Force.
Oh, yeah.
And actually flew to Israel to join their units.
Yeah, I saw.
48 of others here, Diane. Can she come join us?
Who it is?
You gotta go?
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, why am I doing this? I want you to know why I'm doing this. Oh, what this all leads to is because of the 72 war, the 73,
okay.
They boycott oil and won't sell us oil, and that's the start of the oil crisis.
Who, the Arab states?
The Arab states do.
And Venezuela.
Is this during the
first one's in 73, the second one's in 79.
Is Venezuela a member of OPEC then?
I don't know.
Do they boycott us?
It's mainly Arab states right now. And it's in, what do you call it, revenge for our supporting Israel in the war.
Was there a huge oil crisis like when Jimmy Carter did?
Another one, yeah. But here's the 72 one. So there's 48 war, 56 war, 67 war, and then the 72 Yom Kippur or October war. Following that third war, or fourth war, I guess. Yeah, after the fourth war in 72. In 73, Arab states, which do organize OPEC about this time, Arab states stop selling oil to Western Europe and to the United States for a year's time. So the oil embargo. Now why do they do that?
This is the Arab area that wasn't taken in by Israel, right?
Correct. These are all the surrounding Arab nations.
And
they do this to punish the U.S. for supporting Israel. Now, obviously, the price of oil leaps through the roof because it's the oil from other parts of the world, and Alaska's all we can. Thanks for coming.
Is this still the United Arab Republics?
That's Israel. That's Egypt and Syria. Yep.
Yeah,
they say until 72.
What?
They created, I guess they, I don't know if there was really one country, but it was, I mean, it was a whole bunch of countries.
The United Arab Republic was Egypt and Syria.
Was it a real government, or was it like Egypt?
It tried to be, but Syrians didn't like being ruled by Egyptians.
And that's how it would be. Yeah.
So, anyway, this fourth war that occurred in 72, the Yom Kippur October War, was followed by a near year-long oil embargo.
Yom
Kippur is a Israeli holiday.
The new year?
When
no.
You get
space.
So where do we have to get our oil?
From our
South America, Canada, Alaska.
Alaska especially. That's when they start building the pipeline, the Alaskan pipeline.
I've seen that. That's the coolest thing in the world.
It's built because of this oil embargo. Prices go up. This may not be shocking to you, but when before the embargo started, oil generally, or price of gasoline was around 25, 26 cents a gallon. If you really wanted to be fancy and put the high premium stuff in your car and you went to the places where they washed your windows and did a lot of services, it was 35 cents a gallon.
What's this OPEC thing?
The Organization of Petroleum Exporting
Countries. How much was it after
they took petroleum?
75 to 80 cents a gallon. Now that's kick ass. Because that's three times. Could you imagine if oil went three times down to $9 a gallon? That's what it felt like. Yeah, Europe was already into that range. But for America, that was a gigantic leap. What legislation was passed in order to try to cut back on oil consumption?
The environmental restrictions on cars?
Well, the EPA was created, and there was a Congress passed laws on gas mileage that could be made as they start
killed off muscle cars.
And that's when Japanese cars start to gain a foothold in our market.
That and the position of the yen against the dollar made it really cheap for them to get in the market.
So in addition to more fuel-efficient cars coming from Japan and being demanded by Detroit, the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit.
That's what it is.
Well, on cars that are as old as the one that I, let's say, drive. 55 is a market with red, where everything else is white.
Yeah, so you know when you crossed over the one, you know, and nobody wanted to drive 55.
Oh, what does 55 do?
If you drive at 55 instead of 65 or 70, you save gas. You save it's more efficient, and you save lives. You don't run.
Didn't it cut down like half the car accidents?
But cut down accidents, cut down gas. But for the trucking industry, what does that mean?
It means they can't deliver as quickly.
So you literally have to work longer to make the same pay when you haul loads of trucks.
So truck drivers got a pass.
No, they got a CB radio.
Oh, yeah, that too.
This is the big this is actually around the deregulation of CB radio coming out.
Well, when I started teaching at Darby in 75, that's when the CB fad was in big. And
then they started unlicensing it and all that stuff.
And that's also when the Smokey and the Bandit movie.
What else is Mr. Langford's
room? What?
Smokey and the Bandit movie, probably.
Why did they need? How does CB radios help?
You can tell each other what.
So, is there a Smokey around the bend there, or can I keep going 90?
Okay. They didn't have radars back then.
Mm-hmm. But they
didn't have radar detectors.
The radar detectors follow the CB radio.
And by the time your radar detector goes off, you're screwed.
Those things are not worth it.
So that's why the pipeline is
built.
That's why the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit comes. And it's understandable that with the corresponding increase in fuel prices, if it has an effect on other parts of the economy, what's going to happen?
What?
Inflation.
Inflation will run away. Well, Nixon used an old FDR trick from World War II. Let's put three things together here. Why did unions, even though they gained greater advantage in World War I, have trouble? Why did workers have problems, even with better conditions and higher?
They were radical.
The inflation went up, but their wages did not increase.
It. Inflation during World War I went up faster than the wage increases went up, but they were
couldn't
go
on strike to get their
wages. Couldn't strike to get rid of wages. In World War II, because FDR is pro-labor for the New Deal 30s, in World War II, he made sure that the workers don't suffer by wage and price controls. If you just mandate you cannot raise your prices, you cannot raise your wages, there's not going to be, like there ought to be, the natural inflation from war spending.
Who said this?
FDR. In the 1940s. So Nixon used an FDR trick and just instituted wage and price control. So that the effect of the oil will not have a full inflationary impact. Well, when Nixon leaves office In fact, even before Nelson leaves office, the wage and price controls are dropped because so many complaints and criticisms and questions of legality take place. At the end of the Nixon administration, when he drops wage and price controls, from the end of his administration throughout the Ford administration on into the Carter administration to the 70s, inflation led the way. That's where wages and price, you know, house prices and oil prices, everything all leap from the 1972 to the 1980s.
How can you not have price go up if you're buying things from a foreign market?
Well, the wage and price controls are on American markets.
Right, but you have to get stuff from other countries' markets. And it,
they were not under the restraints.
Right, so they were going up in price. And so how can we even purchase things?
You've got me beyond what I can answer. I don't
okay,
know.
I just never. Yeah.
It's good thinking I can't respond to it. But there is a condition that occurs as historically studied, and that is in the 70s, from Ford to Carter years, we had a strange event. I'll look at that in a minute. Strange event occur. Usually, when you have more and more people working, you have more and more people working, it causes inflation. And when you have higher unemployment, inflation cools off and deflation, recession sits in. But the 70s, we had a magic combination. Growing unemployment and growing inflation at the same time. Defying the laws of economics.
It's like totally screwed.
Yeah, and they coined a term for it. Stagflation.
Oh, that's why I brought you that. It's from the macroeconomics test last year. One of the scenarios is the price of oil goes up. What happens to the U.S. economy?
So that's the fit with us. What could happen or did happen?
Well, it says you just say what happened theoretically, but it's what did happen.
Yeah. So the seven. So if you happen to be president during the 70s,
and then you don't get reelected.
If you don't want to put wage and price controls in place, you've got to face the reality of the market where prices go up, but so does unemployment. Stagflation is what hurt Ford and what hurt Carter.
And that's when workers are laid off and everything.
And prices still go up.
Why are they called stagflation?
Because the economy is stagnant, but you still got inflation going on, which makes no sense.
Seriously,
it's like you turn the damn car off, pull the key out, throw it in park, and the thing's still running.
Well, that can actually happen if your mixture's too rich. And it's T-jaw.
And it's in park?
So, yeah. Are we?
That's the transmission.
Are we men enough to face Watergate? That includes you women out there listening to the tape.
Carburetor.
Woods team, let's
go. Think anybody listens to any of this?
I'm going to have to listen to that one I missed because you guys covered a decade.
To what you guys do this weekend.
You got to go.
I told them.
Okay, why don't we do this? Sorry about the wisecrack there.